Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello, welcome to the Match Ball Podcast from us, the Square Ball. I'm Dan Moylan. With me is Michael Normanton.
Hello.
And Moscow White, Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
Some sighs, some melancholy in the studio this evening. We'll get to that in a second. First, thanks to Levi Solicitors for their support on the podcast. 10% off your legal fees if you mention the Square Ball when you inquire. Head to levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. And they've asked us to mention as well, if you are moving house now we're in the new year, lots of people doing that, have a look at their conveyancing stuff and you will get 10% off your fees there as well. I do feel like moving house. I feel like moving to a different city and supporting a different football team this evening, because that wasn't great, was it?
It was half all right. The first half was going fine. We had loads of chances. Just didn't score any. And then the second half, I'm not really sure what happened. The second half seemed to be characterised by them just walking through our team.
Well, that was only the last 5 minutes, though, wasn't it?
No, it was happening a lot through that second half, I thought.
Oh, yeah, the weird child that they have at right back.
Mm.
When Barry Douglas disappeared 10 minutes before he was substituted, that was a problem for quite a while. There was only one team that actually came to win, and then the other team did win, and that's quite annoying. Just look, they had two shots on target, two goals. That's annoying. I hate Gary Monk.
Wait, how many did we have on target?
We had five on target out of a total of 14. They had two on target out of a total of 10.
I saw an interesting stat. I think it was LUFC Data who tweeted it out, saying that we've conceded five times out of six now when we're in the last sort of first shot on target from the opposition in a game. So in the last six occasions that we've faced the first shot on target, we've conceded from it five times.
It's like having Bailey Peacock Farrell back.
We'll get onto Kiko in a minute and that near post shambles. Gary Monk's just got Bielsa's number, hasn't he, really? That's about the size of it.
There was, today was, I think we were the better team. I think everything was very flat, strangely flat, starting with the players. And it was a little bit like, you know, the start of the season when we came back and everybody's mind was still on the Derby defeat and Elland Road was really tetchy. It kind of felt that way in the first half. There was it wasn't as forgiving as it has been. There wasn't that feeling of, Bamford's missed a chance, but another will come and he'll score that one. Instead, it was, Bamford's missed a chance. We're probably going to get relegated now. And that crept it. And then, yeah, the performance as a whole, I think we were good, but there was nothing really that looked like it was ever going to lift us above good. We were kind of, Bielsa's got our emotions so beautifully well rehearsed that when we are kind of going through the motions, we are still attacking strongly. But it needed, even when it needed Hernandez to come on and set up two goals. But even he came on and he couldn't really make a difference.
No, you're right as well. Because I think we played within ourselves. That's right. That's the right
way to describe it. That's a good way of putting it.
We played within ourselves rather than that really sort of expansive, exciting way that we did against Arsenal in the first half. So even like you say today, when we were on top in the first, it felt a bit more functional rather than where you're going, wow, come on Leeds, and that tension that's in the air at the minute.
Still created some good chances though. Early on, there was the Bamford one where he just completely passed it to their goalkeeper. Phillips did some nice work down, some nice closing down, and then it broke to Bamford on the edge of the box. Not an easy chance, but the sort of thing that, if it's the first shot we face, definitely goes in the top corner.
It's easier if you actually kick the ball.
Yeah, it was his right foot, wasn't it, I think?
He got confused with your passing advice and your shooting advice. He got the two things mixed up. And it was his right foot, but then he had that chance that their keeper saved, where I couldn't work out from my angle if he had hit the post or his arm.
Tell either.
That was his right foot. So he can do it.
I think that hit either the outside of the post or the side netting, didn't it?
Ronald? And we got a corner. Brilliant.
I mean, from that angle...
Maybe there was a touch then,
mate. The thing is, you can't score from that angle, can you? That tricky angle of the six-yard box. You know, any good goalkeeper will save those.
Thing is, right, we've not become a bad side overnight. And I know what tends to happen now is everybody panics and goes into meltdown if Twitter's anything to go by. We haven't instantly become a bad side. Patrick Bamford hasn't suddenly gone from looking like he's in really good form to being terrible. But what we've seen is his limits, the squad's limits. I mean, to go into that game, we've got one senior striker in the squad, which is unforgivable in my book, given we knew Nketiah was going. We like to operate with a thin squad anyway. There is no room for pissing about with it this year. And the idiots made the documentary in which Angus Kinnear says, we're not pissing about with the playoffs this year. But unfortunately, the longer this carries on, and this is where the frustration stems from, then the closer we skirt to that outcome yet again, which we've seen all the evidence for. And the fear is that evidence, you know, it's happening again, isn't it? The evidence is there again.
We are still 8 points clear of third.
We are. And I mean, I did tweet from the Square Ball account saying, look, you know, next week we could go top at QPR if we beat them in the early kickoff, and everything will look a damn sight better. And, you know, football changes a lot in 7 days. But it's just, today's the microcosm of all the frustrations.
I'm going to question your maths here, Moscow. Look again at the table.
It's six.
It's six.
Okay.
but it's the same point, the point stands. Yeah, I mean, look, if somebody had said to you, you'll come out of Christmas 6 points clear of third in second place and just a point off the top, you'd have gone, but it's the context, isn't it? It's the fact that we're here in January again, we've had the wobble, it's one win in seven now, we desperately need players into the squad, as we did before, we know he operates a thin squad, so why aren't we busting our balls? And maybe they are, but maybe just the methodology is wrong, maybe this is the problem with Bielsa, I don't know.
The thing is today it's highlighted because Bamford was never going to score today. But there was a chance in the second half as well where, I think there were two, I think there was one where it was passed across from the right-hand side and he managed to hit it about 5 yards over the bar. He had a header.
There's a diving header.
Went over the bar. And I just feel like we could have played forever with Bamford up front today and we would never have scored. But when there's literally not a person on the pitch or the bench who can play up front instead of him, you're kind of stuck.
That bloody Meghan Markle. She's ruined his week. He can't believe what's happening to the royal family. He'll be fuming about that actress. It needed... I think the argument... my thing is I was walking away in favour of new players. It's not so much quality. Just some freshness. I think it does just need somebody new in there, and that's one of the positive things you can do in the January window we've discussed on the other podcasts. It's hard to find players in January, and it's hard to not have your pants down financially in January because it's a seller's market and teams aren't thinking about letting their players go. Every club everywhere is thinking we need to add a couple, but what it can do apart from better players is just something a bit fresh, something a bit different, something that's not just...
Well, it adds that. It's like if you put a new player in, it adds a bit of competition to Bamford, and it's not the same player that he's got to know in Nketiah. It's somebody new. It just keeps everybody, gives everybody that shot in the arm, doesn't it?
There's no shame in a striker having an off day. Every player has a bad day, but...
We've seen him do this 1,000 times.
But that's why you change them and bring someone else on when they're having a bad day. If they miss 2 or 3 chances, you think, well, time to give someone else a go, whereas we just couldn't do that today.
It does depend how long it takes to bring in Shea Adams or whoever it's going to be. If it's more than, I can forgive them one game because it's, you know, as we're saying, January is a difficult time to sign players. I don't think that's an appeasing thing to say. I think it is a fact. If you look at the transfer market, why is the deadline day such a big thing on Sky Sports? It's because everybody spends January arguing about what players they want to sign, and then on 6 p.m. on the 31st, they all go, oh, fucking hell, go on then, you've been badgering us for 3 weeks, let's do the deal. And that's a fact.
That is,
so it will take time, but we can't go on until the 31st of January. We can't do that.
Moscow,
I'll give them a game.
Moscow, I agree with you, and it does, because if it's Shea Adams, then they obviously want to get another striker in. That's everything that's, all the evidence that's there about Southampton. Fine. But you've got Angus Kinnear in the programme notes today. And it is now January the 11th. I mean, okay, he might have written these a couple of days ago before it went to print, whatever, but it's January the 11th and they're talking about moving early in the window. It's like, we're nearly 2 weeks in, pal.
It's all relative. Well, that's what I mean. It's all It's if well, didn't he say, I haven't got them to hand, but he said that they started working on the deals they want to do before Nketiah left. Well, this is, I mean...
Great, so how long is it going to take then?
Well, isn't that...
Is it going to be another defeat next week?
Is it the selling club's fault? Do we need to, how much money do we need to pay the selling clubs? We're going to do... The argument last season was with Daniel James, we should have just given them 30 million on the 1st of January and just bought him. And that's just not how it works. It will be, and you know, you might offer Southampton 30 million for Shea Adams. It's gone, no, I want him in the squad. And there's two parties to every negotiation that they're doing. I don't think it's as simple as just saying, we want to buy a striker and then he magically appears.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, but don't go in the programme and say you're moving early then, nearly midway through the month. It just seems naive. I mean, I know there's nigh on 3 weeks still left in the transfer window, but today ramps up the pressure a whole nother level. You know, Nketiah went, they knew at Christmas, they probably knew prior to that in the run-up that this was going to happen. Don't go in the programme and say that. Don't do a documentary and say we're not pissing him out with the playoffs this year and then repeat exactly the same behaviours again.
I mean, the Dan James thing, I know you're exaggerating with the 30 million thing, but we were pissing around with like, oh, well, actually, can we pay you like 800 grand loan fee now and then we'll make it permanent at the end of the season and stuff. If we'd have gone to them at the start of the window and said, look, just here's 5 million quid, can we have him? They probably would have just given...
Especially if we'd moved before the other clubs moved on their other players as well, so they didn't lose all those players. We went first.
The opening bid was a straight transfer. We offered him 7 million at the start of the window and Swansea kept haggling about letting him go, but the opening up bid was just a reasonably sized transfer offer.
So how come the end deal for him was less than that?
Because Swansea didn't want to let him go, and it ended up being all over the place, and it was going to be a loan, and it was Swansea who wanted it structured as a loan and then pay in the summer. The payment of the loan fee was what they were arguing about on January the 31st. That wasn't the problem. It was getting them to agree to sell him at all through January.
Okay, yeah, I mean, there is an absolutely fair argument there, and we saw in the documentary that it probably wasn't the fault of the club, but the strategy is determined by the club. I think that's the point that we're getting at, and it's also the club's choice to make their feelings on the transfer window public. So maybe that's where the frustration is, and it's frustrating a game like today. So why did we lose that today?
Well, I was just going to say on that, it is easier if Angus Kinnear does not put these things in the programme. I'm preempting it now. It will be easier. It's 10 to 6 at the moment. It will be easier at 9:30 if Andrea Ratrizzani, somebody needs to just take his phone off him now and preempt Saturday night, because at full time looking at Elland Road emptying, and I can feel it with the way you're kind of talking about the January transfer window, because the transfer window is open, nobody is taking that 2-0 defeat likely would have done in November or the start of December. It's just like, oh, wow.
But window's coming up.
Oh, with the next game. Well, yeah, it would be, well, we can fix it in January. Instead, it's we go a goal behind and then two goals. And I haven't seen Elland Road empty like that in ages. And it's because the window's open and we haven't signed anybody.
And they've closed the car parks as well.
And although they've got the new park and ride at Temple Green, Temple Newsom.
So there's some good news of today.
Yes.
And that's your hero sorted for today, isn't it? The park and ride's open. Brilliant.
But I was...
Happy New Year, everyone.
I was looking around that stadium and immediately thinking, right, just somebody just take Radrizzani's phone off him, because you can predict it. It'll happen at 9:00.
Unless he's doing a bank transfer.
He'll pick somebody and he'll reply to them and it'll be that we need to think positive, blah, blah, blah. And it won't help.
Pay
and
Southampton FC £5 million.
That would be fine. But you're right. It's like it doesn't help Angus Kinnear saying that. But then, what would people have said if his programme notes didn't have any updates on the transfer window? There'll be people complaining about both.
It's unwinnable. You're right.
The less said, I do subscribe to the Howard Wilkinson's old tactic. He said, if you don't tell anybody what you're doing, then they don't know what you're doing. I think that's a brilliant way to be and just keep everything quiet. Oh, we've done all. If this midget hotshot from Manchester City signs and we get the goalkeeper what we want, those just seem to be quietly going through. It's the striker that's the problem, though.
And, it is, yeah. Even still, the midget genius from Man City, you're still hoping that it works out, and you're hoping that he can get up to speed quick enough, and hoping that, you know, it's not a proven player, is it? There's an argument to say we probably don't necessarily need one with Pablo on the way back and Costa's in there and Jackie Harrison. But still, it's all just these little whatever the incremental, not losses, but not quite doing things in the most optimal way to go and get promoted. Like you look at Sheffield United last year, they did business on the 1st of January. They, you know, they got two strikers. It's like just remove all doubt and you don't have to go nuts to do it. You don't have to go nuts to do it.
You do look at West Brom today though, and they've drawn 2-2 at Charlton.
That's true.
I feel like sometimes we're in a bit of a Leeds bubble where we think we're the only ones that this applies to, but they'll be looking over the shoulder at Brentford as well, because they've only got a point away at a team where Charlton the 19th. At least Sheffield Wednesday with those 3 points are in the playoffs. I don't think we're the only ones who are.
The unease comes though from feeling like we're not necessarily trying our best to actually do this properly by not having another striker, because West Brom, if you draw games and you're actually giving yourself an opportunity to win them by having Charlie Austin to bring on, that is better than just feeling like you're just failing because, well, there's Bamford, or I guess you could stick John Stevens up front for a bit, see how he does, or whatever. You know,
fingers crossed.
That's basically the option, isn't it? Like maybe Jack Harrison can play there.
Well, we were listening to Noel Whelan as we came in on Radio Leeds, who was talking about how Sheffield Wednesday have 5 strikers in their squad. I think it might be 6 if you count Stephen Fletcher, and you know, that's a proper way to run things. None of them scored more than 3.
And they are in a bit of trouble with the old finances, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. It's just like,
But there's a balancing act.
There is a balancing act, and certainly we are balancing the wrong direction with one striker, especially when it's a striker who has the game he had today. But if, like I said, if they go out this week, and I think I've written it in the back page of the new Square Ball, so it's not like I'm saying anything I've not said before. Speed, time is of the essence, and I'm not bothered about how much the player they bring in costs so much. Like, I don't need a £10 million striker. I need a striker soon so that we're not going into more and more games with only one striker. But I'll allow it for a game, because it's a game we should have won.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The good thing about the Championship is that it is draws that tend to kill you rather than defeats. You can afford, I think, to lose the odd game, as long as you don't lose too many. We've said it many times before. As long as you win more than you lose, you generally do all right. So not too much to worry about. And the table is still fine. It's not, is it? They're only 5 points out of the playoffs, aren't they now, or something? Mental.
They'll be creeping up on us next. If we're worrying about Brentford, should we worry about Borough?
Anyway, so back to the game today and losses. Why did we lose that today?
Because we didn't score in the first half when we had several good chances. Harrison had a chance that was very near from a Douglas free kick that he got. It wasn't a bad shot, really. It must have only been an inch or two wide. Bamford had a couple of chances. I mean, he did get it in the net, actually, Bamford.
Very good header.
I don't know
if his click was offside when he...
Was he?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Well, I don't know if that's what it was given against, and there didn't see much
Yeah, that linesman in front of the East Stand. In fact, I'll nominate him for a villain. He seemed to get loads wrong. Seemed to miss a few offsides to them, and he also missed a couple of times the ball went out of play.
Bambo wasn't happy with him. He argued one offside vehemently. Wasn't happy all day. He was kind of...
He had a whiny day.
Yeah, when a through ball wasn't coming his way, he was doing a little flappy tantrum. Mm-hmm. Bitty.
There was that... I think it was a very... soft call. I think it was one of the penalty appeals. He was trying to appeal for a penalty or something when it might have been a header, maybe. Just having a good old whinge. Just stop it. And Kiko with the positioning of a daft racist today for the first goal.
Him and, quite far to the left, oddly enough.
Him and Alioski, when Alioski headed the ball away from him, it hadn't occurred to me before. Like, whatever tactics Bielsa employs, just keep those away from each other. It's like crossing the streams in Ghostbusters. Alioski and Kiko should not be near each other. And before we get to the goal, so there was the good first half when we were we didn't score. We were better, but it was very flat. And Norman Hunter was as he walked past, he was muttering that Sheffield Wednesday had not come to play. And he pointed out that he said they've got a good little player like Barry Bannon and he's had about four touches. And I think there was a lot of Wednesday were doing, even they seem quite half-hearted in it compared to how they've been before, but a lot of those kind of shirt pulls and little digs in behind the strikers and stuff like they were there to be kind of like spoiling it.
I thought Bannon did get a bit more involved in the second half. Yeah. He seemed to be playing a bit deeper and was able to actually play some passes and
problems. What happened? I mentioned it before about Barry Douglas sort of disappearing from the pitch 10 minutes before he actually was substituted. But suddenly, when their little right back was racing down the right wing, I was looking around the pitch and I couldn't find him. I wasn't sure where he was when that was happening. I was watching like Cooper racing across to go and tackle this kid. And
normally
like,
Alioski, that, isn't it? he's on the right wing. There he is.
Well, it was interesting because then when Alioski did come on, the first thing he did was kind of, he tackled that lad by sort of getting in between him and the ball and then falling on the ball and then dragging him down as well and getting away with it all. And that's not Barry Douglas's style of defending ever. But it was weird. Suddenly that side of the pitch became a problem and they got in about three times. Once Alioski was on and that problem was kind of nullified and then Pablo came on, I think the 10 minutes up until them scoring, we were hammering away.
We were
not really making the chance that we would have wanted, but certainly it only looked... And I don't want to throw him in the... throw him under the bus or mention yet again that I was sitting next to Phil Hay on the gantry, but 85 minutes he leaned over to me and he said, I think there's a goal in this for Leeds, you know. 86 minutes, there was the goal for Sheffield
Wednesday. Well done, Jonah Hay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that with him on Thursday.
I think down the left side, I think, that had really started to get away from us down that side. I think Monk had sussed that at half time and he must have said, go down the right, because they were down that side every time after half time.
Yeah.
When they had that spell when they were on top.
But it was sorted. It got, you know, the change was made and then the goals, mistakes, isn't it? Just losing the ball in midfield and then that shot beating Kiko. So two mistakes.
I've now seen replays from two angles of that and I'm still not entirely sure how it's gone in. There doesn't seem to be any room for that ball to get past him.
You know how on Monday we're all like, oh, Meslier, can you just stay in? I kind of feel like I wish he had.
Yeah.
Mm.
Possibly an argument for on the evidence.
There wasn't much wrong with Kiko otherwise today, apart from the one that Alioski petted away from him, which was definitely more Alioski than him.
Does it show maybe a lack of faith in the keeper there, though? Because he got the shout.
I think he just... Was he listening?
He does, yeah. No, I think it's just...
He's just not listening. In his head, isn't he?
But apart from that, he was fine. But then, the goal, which is not... I know that thing was mentioned before about us always conceding when there's a shot on target. I'd need to sort of mentally go back and... Not mentally, but actually properly look at those goals again and remind myself. But he does save some. Oh, you're going to show me these ones. Yeah. I mean, it's two mistakes, isn't it? And then that last goal is just, again, don't pass. I don't know who it was that tried to get our breakaway going by passing to a player who actually could not either well, he couldn't stand, was the thing. Stuart Dallas was just standing in midfield trying to be inconspicuous, and somebody from defence passed it to him and he just couldn't keep it, and that gave Bannon the opportunity. Lovely pass behind. And so the second goal, I think, is one of those. If Stuart Dallas wasn't mortally wounded, or we hadn't tried to give the ball to him as he committed his kind of like war film acting death.
Dying swan. Act.
Yes, dying swan is a better way of putting it.
He did look in a very bad way, because he's not the sort of player to stay down either when needed, and he literally couldn't stand up for about... He spent 2 minutes trying to get to his feet and falling over again.
Yeah, and just he kept punching the turf and he was kicking the turf, and you could tell he was angry. So, yeah, and then somebody's bright idea, Stewie, you want the ball? No, he does not want the ball. And that's what the second goal was. It was just pure... that was the mistake, and once we were turned around for that.
And the second, I mean, when you concede a second when you're chasing a game, it almost doesn't matter, does it?
No. It's the first one that I don't know who did give the ball away in midfield. I've not seen it back.
Phillips seems to have been what people are saying
in front of Gareth Southgate, who was there to watch him. Excellent.
I watched when the full time whistle blew. The ball was dropping towards Phillips, and he tried to do that thing of just volleying it straight back up in the air in frustration, and he completely miskicked it. And it felt like that summed up
the day.
Yeah. You could tell there was nothing. There was points as well where Luke Ayling and Liam Cooper were having a big argument about who should have been doing something at a corner. And there was just, you could tell nothing seemed happy today.
It was all a bit tetchy again. Yeah.
From the start. Yeah. On the pitch, in the stands, everywhere, it just didn't feel like going to Elland Road and thinking, "Yeah, we are actually going to
carry on."
See, it probably is that the fucker does seem to have some kind of weird hex over Marcelo Bielsa, and I do not understand where that comes from, because he has done nothing in his life to deserve it. he doesn't deserve to win football matches, especially not against Marcelo Bielsa. He deserves to stand on the touchline. And I was annoyed. I say this sometimes, I like comparing our technical area to other technical areas, because we have that squad of military men who are all, they're all doing stuff and they're all debating the game. Whereas I noticed Sheffield Wednesday were a bit like a lot of teams are going, where the manager just stands in the dugout doing nothing, apart from he'll occasionally go to everybody else. He just stays, sits down, and goes, "Do you think I should bring on you? Who do you think, a big lad?" And they go, "Yeah, boss, big lad." And he goes, and so he goes and thinks about that for a while. But then when they scored their second, suddenly there's about 30 of them, and they're all in the technical area, jumping and celebrating and hollering. And Wednesday did that thing of making sure their celebrations were right in front of the home fans as well. And I was looking at them and thinking, well, where the fuck have all you lot come from? Where have you been all game? You've sat on the bench and you've contributed nothing. At least our lot, you've got Corbran, you've got Flores, you've got the whole lot of them. They're all up and they're all. And so if we score, they can all be entitled to say, yes, we have all contributed to the group effort that has brought about this victory over the rival. This lot, who the fuck were they?
Well, a few comments that have just come out in the aftermath. Bielsa says there's, Phil reporting that Bielsa says there is an anxiety around the team. So that bodes well, doesn't it? Christ above. But at least Ben White is saying that he wants to get to and play in the Premier League with Leeds. So he's staying forever.
I noticed that one. That's great. That's good. He came up with a complete miskick today as well.
He did. He managed to somehow keep hold of it.
Yes.
It was a bit Phil Musinga at Arsenal, where he kind of completely missed the ball and then it worked out quite well for him.
There was some good stuff in the second half. I think that thing of recognising it wasn't a good performance, the players were trying. There was a spell when it was Pablo and then Click and then I think Liam Cooper, all really working hard to retain possession and make sure that we weren't giving the ball away, and they were trying to make things happen. And I thought they are actually trying to dig this out at 0-0 and get a win. And I had some. So if there is a anxiety amongst them, they were showing signs of overcoming it. And certainly, and that was in that spell I'm thinking of in the second half when we were dominating and we were the one who were doing all the attacking. And effectively, Wednesday just got lucky. I was kind of expecting us not to score, unlike Phil, and it to be just another Dow Mill nil-nil like it was at Hillsborough.
In fairness, they did have the best chance of that second half as well from the corner where it looked like there was a header they should have scored, and then it came back to someone who was about 6 yards out who hit it over the bar. That was the best chance of the half.
Well, there was also the one where their little right back managed to cross it and Kiko missed across the low cross, and I think it was Winnell again, couldn't slide in it at the back post. It's the classic thing of we're doing all the attacking and the other team is producing the most dangerous moments. But it's kind of interesting to compare it to the game at Hillsborough, which if they'd have got lucky twice then, they hit the bar at Hillsborough, didn't Fletcher hit the bar? From memory, so they could have won that one in exactly the same style. So maybe it's just that's just a team.
Yeah, we just can't quite get it against them, can we? For
it's a team
reason.
With a plan that seems to spoil us, and it's that fucking strawberry faced wanker.
So emotions have been running high today. So where do we go from here then? What do we need to do now?
By three strikers, two centre backs,
wingers, don't
left
the,
back.
There was a guy on the radio
wingers,
saying we need wingers
and at least two. World-class central midfielder.
Seriously, though, what do we do from here?
We buy a good striker, and that's probably about all we'll do. It's probably about all we need.
I think it would do.
One really good striker is preferable to buying four half-decent other players who might contribute at some point next season.
Yeah. And you like the look of the Man City midget?
It looks good on YouTube, doesn't
Excellent.
He? And I don't know much about him, but I've seen the comments that apparently Bielsa thinks he can go straight into a championship team. So it's not going to be... He's taking the Jack Clark spot, but they think he might be better. And it's interesting that we're going for a permanent move with that as well. It's maybe the that Tyler Roberts factor of we're getting somebody in January that maybe not this season, but can contribute if, assuming he doesn't do the Tyler Roberts
for next year's promotion bid
of his glass legs. I think a striker will do, because that first half, if Bamford buries a chance, if one of the others buries a chance, if somebody buries a chance, and I think bringing in a Shea Adams or somebody of that ilk, even a Billy Sharp, somebody with the swagger. Nketiah had the swagger, but as we discussed on the Athletic podcast with Phil, his first loan, never done anything anywhere apart from in the under-23s, and the under-23s isn't real life. So somebody who has put the ball in the net on a regular basis in this division, who can just come in and be confident. Confident would help, just somebody coming in from outside and freshening it up.
Clear hero from today then is Shea Adams. Congratulations on your assist in the game for Southampton, and we look forward to you signing in the coming days, etc. Thanks for listening to this one then. LevisSolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball, 10% off your legal fees. We'll speak to you later in the week.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.